Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are covering a great variety of topics, all relating to local food, of course, but all very different, too. First of all, we'll head to the east side of Indianapolis to Pogue's Run Grocer, a co-op grocery store and deli that is marking 5 years in business. Then we'll head out to Henry County, Indiana to Caprini Creamery, Indiana's newest goat dairy, to talk with co-owner and cheesemaker Christy Kickley. Finally, we will talk restaurants and cocktails with Chef Aaron Butts, formerly of Joseph Dupuis Restaurant in Roanoke, who will be opening The Golden in Fort Wayne this spring. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. The phrase local food a lot here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and it has a lot of meanings. I'm most often talking about a local restaurant or farmer or food artisan, but sometimes local food means something more basic. Sometimes it means just having access to fresh food in your neighborhood. Unfortunately, not all of us have easy access to fresh food. Food deserts exist in Indianapolis, but plenty of people and organizations are working to increase access to fresh local food. One such organization, the Indy Food Co-op, is a member-owned cooperative that operates Pogue's Run Grocer, a full-service grocery on the Indianapolis East Side that provides affordable, healthy, fresh food. I talked with Greg Munzel recently, the first general manager at Pogue's Run Grocer and the current interim general manager, about how the co-op came about.
Early on, when the co-op began, it was really a community effort, and people from all over the community here on the Near East Side came together from different backgrounds and different associations and saying, really, we need to have a place in our neighborhood where people can get good, healthy, local food options that we can afford.
So, because that was a big problem here, right?
Right, yeah. This area is still really a food desert, but, you know, we have put a dent in that desert for sure just being here. And that was really our mission, is to try to alleviate the food desert that's here on the Near East Side, or at least help to work towards that.
What was the reaction to the community with the effort to start the co-op?
The community has been really supportive in this area, and we've had a lot of nonprofit partners that gave and supported our project and helped us get here that we couldn't have really opened the store without. And in general, the community has been really favorable of us here. And, we have a lot of the majority of our customers come from the neighborhood in this area. And so I think we're really providing a good service to people here.
What was it like very early on?
This is a really interesting project. We are kind of the only co-op in the country that really tried to do this, and at least that's open now, as far as I know. There's been a few other projects that have tried to start co-ops in their food desert communities, and it's a real challenge. So it's definitely a challenge. We had our work cut out for us, but there was just such a great feeling of community among our members and contributors at the beginning that just really, I mean, it's just a powerful thing to see people come together on a grassroots level and build something where there's nothing.
What was the reaction from the city? Did you get support early on there?
Yeah, the city's also been really supportive of us. They actually gave us a $100,000 grant to help us buy equipment and fixtures for the building. So that, showed their support. And Mayor Ballard even came to our first grand opening.
So what was the reaction to the neighborhood to that grand opening? Did people get the idea and sort of buy into the concept?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky to communicate to the neighborhood what we are and what we're doing here, because we are a member-based store, so we have different pricing for some items for members, and so that created some confusion initially, I think, amongst neighbors. wondering who are members, what are members, how does this work, can anybody just come here and shop? So we had some things to overcome with that. But I think that we've done that pretty well. We have signage open to the public on the outside of the building and things of that nature to try to help bring people in. And we've done a lot of canvassing on foot and then also with mailers to the local neighborhood, too, to make sure that people know we're here and that they can come on in and shop. And we've given out all kinds of coupons and things, too, to try to get neighbors in. So
after 5 years, are people used to it?
I think so. I think people are used to it. We are a little bit different. You know, when people come in and shop, they may not see the brands that they're used to seeing on the shelf, either our economy brands or our higher-end brands. And shopping in bulk foods is a little different for some folks. But it's just been a matter of ongoing education with people, and so we just try to provide excellent customer service when people come in so that we can help them sort through some of these things if possible.
How is a co-op different from another sort of model that people are used to, like the regular model or even the discount houses, you know, the big box places?
We have a different model in that we are owned by our members, essentially, who are our shoppers. And so co-ops can have different models, and you can have worker-based co-ops where the store would be owned by its employees, but we are a consumer cooperative model, so we're actually owned by our shoppers. So they have a real voice and say in how things are managed and how things are governed here at the store. And we really value those members, and they get special discounts and things. So it's different, and it's because it is community and locally controlled that keeps the assets local also. So our profits aren't, you know, if we were generating profits, they're not going to a multinational firm somewhere. They are staying right here in the community and working to bring prices down on our foods for our members.
So what have been some of the challenges over the year?
Oh, boy. Well, starting any new business, there's always a challenge with developing business and getting cash flow where you need it to be. So that's, of course, still a challenge for everybody that's doing business these days, as far as I know. The competitive environment for a grocery store is very tough, and there's a very thin profit margin, even for those big box stores. They're usually netting less than 1% of those sales actually hit the profit line. So it's really difficult to edge out competition and be competitive in the market. We're a small store with a limited buying power. So that has been competitive. It's been difficult to stay affordable.
What are some of the other challenges, you know, of running a co-op in a challenging neighborhood, you know?
I guess on a personal level, I can say that, you know, when we started out, we had several people that I hired in who are from the local neighborhood here that didn't work out for one reason or another. And it was difficult for me, I think, to kind of go through these personal challenges that these folks had in their own lives and kind of trying to work with them as an employer to try to give them some stability and a livelihood and to see that, you know, there's some other systemic issues in our culture and the environment here that in which we work that create personal challenges for people. And it's a real challenge, I think, for a lot of folks in our area who are desperate and do have very limited resources in some cases. And so just seeing some of that play out has been a challenge for me emotionally, I can say.
Now, tell me again what your role here was and very early on, and then what you're doing now.
I started out as the first general manager here at the food co-op, and so I started out with building out of the store and working on the design. I was the person that signed off on the building permits and things of that nature, and then worked to hire in our first staff and to get the store up and running, stocked, and doing business. And then I left after about a year of the store being open and turned over operations to Nate, who was essentially my assistant at that time. And he's been a great general manager for us for the last 4 years. Now Nate has decided to take a different turn with his career. So as he moves on, I've been asked to come back and act as interim general manager to help us get through the transition.
Are you happy with the progress that the co-op has made over the last 5 years?
Yeah, you know, over the last 5 years, I think it's just a real victory that we are still here and still doing business, and our sales are better than ever. We you know, we're doing three or four times the level of sales that we had when I worked here before. So I'm really pleased to see that progress. I'm really pleased to see some of our core employees still here 5 years later who have been with us from the beginning. I think that's a victory. You know, we still have other challenges too. So other things have come up in those 5 years that are a challenge. So it's a mixed bag.
We've been talking with Pogue's Run Grocer Interim General Manager Greg Monzel. We'll be back with more on the co-op's fifth anniversary here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Pogue's Run Grocer, a co-op grocery store located on East 10th Street on Indy's Near East Side, is a success story in combating the problem of food deserts in Indianapolis. The neighborhood has embraced the co-op model, sales are up, and despite infrastructure challenges, like the need for a new roof, the future of Pogue's Run Grocer looks promising. The member-owned co-op is celebrating its fifth anniversary on Saturday, January 16th, and I stopped in recently to talk with some longtime employees to get their perspective on the co-op's success, including Alan Walker, customer service manager.
I hear quite often people say, yeah, I've been living here for years, and I never knew this store was here. This is neat. This is great. And, you know, they walk in, and they see all the different products we have that you may not see in Kroger or Marsh as much. But they're also starting to become educated as far as the benefits from healthy alternatives, and they're beginning to reap the benefits. We've had several people in our neighborhood who have come in with different ailments, and they come in and they, you know, they'll tell us, well, I have this ailment and I really don't know what to do. My doctor says this, or I just don't know what to do. So We educate them as much as we can, and if we get the information for them. And I have seen also firsthand how people have benefited, and their ailments have gone away in a lot of cases and gotten better. And also just becoming aware of what you can do to lengthen your life and your health. People are really excited, and I wasn't really aware until people started coming in that they were really wanting the same things. So it's very exciting. People really love this store, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. A lot of positive energy.
So there was a real need for this store, but did people realize it? You know, that the need was there, were they surprised, you know, once it was up and running?
Well, there were stores similar to this throughout the city, different places, and there were people who generally always have had a healthier lifestyle in their approach. A lot of those were part of our founding members. They had a vision. The vision came to fruition, and we really have to give credit to some of our founding members, because they had the vision, they brought the vision, they did shop some of the other stores that are similar to us, and they brought it to the community so that everyone can benefit, and that's really the basis of how we got started. So there was a vision. Some of our locals, again, becoming aware of the benefits of healthy alternatives, and all of us have ailments, and getting the knowledge to correct and overcome those ailments if possible is a beautiful thing. So everyone's really excited. There was some vision initially, again, among the original members, but as things developed and grew, so the excitement and the knowledge and the appreciation began to grow, and it's just been on a wave of energy and positivity.
I also talked with Pogue's Run produce buyer, Twan Schroeder, about his views on the co-op's success.
I've been working here 5 years.
So you've been here from the beginning?
Yeah, I actually volunteered to help paint ceiling tiles and sweep up construction debris, all sorts of things like that. And then I got hired in, it was December 22nd of 5 years ago.
What was it about the idea of the co-op that that made you want to volunteer right from the beginning?
So I have been working at a job that was in the suburbs. It was a boring retail job that was very bureaucratic. I spent a lot of time out, you know, 40 hours a week driving down to Greenwood, looking outside of a store and seeing evidence of human beings, but no real presence of human beings. I saw a system and felt the, you know, the deprivation of a system where people are very detached from their source of food, source of living, things like that, a very sterile means of life. And I started to ask questions about that. My own personal kind of background had drawn me into, I was at a conference one time in Memphis, and there's a guy talking about two views of the cosmos, and one of them was based on competition, and one was based on cooperation or collaboration. And he talked a lot about different structured businesses that fall within those two different views of the world, one of them being more entrepreneurial, not necessarily entrepreneurial, but more capitalistic, more profit-driven, and then one being more collaborative-driven. And he mentioned, you know, credit unions and co-ops and things like that. And then once I had heard the idea of how co-ops existed, I was very intrigued about that model of a business and connecting people not only on a level of, you know, like we do with local food and local meat and all that stuff, but more so as, like, this is a business that is owned by the people who are, you know, most interested in it, and its purpose is and focus is are those people more so than just the idea of creating a business to make money.
So you have been very hands-on with the co-op. Tell me how it has evolved over the past 5 years, maybe from the initial reactions to where you are today.
So before I was even involved, I mean, I remember hearing, I knew I am friends with Mary Bowling, and she has been involved in the board, and some of her family and a lot of people from her community at Inglewood have been involved in the process of getting this into existence. So I'd always heard her talking about, you know, this is what we're trying to do, and it took so many years, and a lot of people put effort into it. But the beautiful thing was, like, it was this community effort, definitely grassroots people wanting to see something change and coming together to make it happen. I feel like in the Midwest particularly, there's at least in my generation and maybe the generation before me, there's this kind of feeling of, like, we'll just wait for somebody else to do it rather than, like, we're going to make this happen. But what had happened was there's a lot of people involved in that process saying we want a grocery store here on the east side after some major chains pulled out because they weren't economically interested anymore, which, again, shows you, like, our model as a co-op was kind of like, we're here for this part of the city, for this neighborhood. So then there was a process of finding a location. They find a location, and then they have to decide how they're going to build it out. And that's when they hired Greg Monzel, which was invaluable to the development of this place. Greg having had a lot of experience in the past dealing with running natural food stores and even having strange connections with getting construction done and whatever. So that was part of the process, and I came in and was volunteering to help paint ceiling tiles, and there was always this kind of, like, we might open in 2 months, we might be hiring in 2 months, and I kept waiting. Then finally I get hired in December, and Greg tells me we're going to open in a week. So I'm like, okay, so I'm in here, and I'm plugging away at stocking the shelves, setting up the store. We open the doors, it's a big hurrah, all these people rush in, but then you know, there's kind of that, the thing about a grocery store is you need habits. You need people to come in and become habitual shoppers and make that their regular place. Otherwise, a grocery store doesn't really work. So our first year was really scary and rough. It was up and down. You know, we had money, but we're being very careful in our budgeting and how we're spending that money. And when you don't have a whole lot of people coming in, you don't want to be throwing away a lot of stuff. And especially that's a conviction of our own, is not to waste a lot. So, but as time has gone on, we've, you know, slowly developed, and year after year, up until this past year, we were having steady growth as a business and seeing, you know, sales double year by year and things like that, which is a great thing. And now we have a lot of people who have made this their regular place, and we have a lot of vendors that we've, and farmers and producers that we've seen a growth at the same time. Like one example is South Circle Farm. Primarily Amy Matthews runs that, but she has a lot of help from some amazing people too, and she is just hands down one of the best growers in the city. I can't tell you, she knows how to run a business, she knows how to grow those vegetables amazing, and she's also just a hardworking, joyful human being. And as we've been able to grow, she's been growing, quite literally and metaphorically. But she, I've seen, like, we've been able to do, you know, as we've grown selling her product, people want to buy what she grows here because they know the quality associated with it. So they might buy at a farmer's market, or they know you can come here and buy it. So that's just like kind of a microcosm of an example of seeing growth alongside with what we've been doing here. And it's just funny. I can look back and remember when, you know, I could only order a small amount from her, and then now it's like almost I can't get enough in.
Well, that's great. So there is, I mean, that's real growth, yeah. You know, that you have seen firsthand. Mm. How has it been, you know, developing those partnerships and communicating to your members and customers, you know, that, you know, that this is local stuff and you're, you know, you're stocking, you know, as much local as you can.
So there's definitely a interesting conflict that exists out there. One of them is people who look at grocery shopping as a tight budget situation. They don't see the value in spending a lot of money on kale or chard or whatever. And that's something I've had to, you know, you talk to them, you help them understand, you're like, okay, this money stays in our city. That's a big thing. Two, it transforms the landscape of our city. And three, it's also a higher nutrient dense product that's coming, you know, grown with more intentionality, better inputs, better care. And in the long run, it's a greater value. When I was at one time within the first year of us, I think it was the first year that we opened, I went on a trip to Guatemala to visit some rural areas where there's some cooperative businesses being developed with some indigenous folks. And one of the things that they said there linguistically that is much different than some people's perspective here, because language is a lens for culture and meaning in the world. Is when you would go to the market and you'd ask about something, you wouldn't say cuánto cuesta, which means how much does it cost. You'd say que vale, which means what's the value. Especially the Midwestern mindset is this idea was of perspective of life that's so detached from the soil, as I said before. And when there's a lot of people we've started to have change that perspective, or maybe we're just part of that movement. I shouldn't say that we've necessarily changed them. We're just a part of what's happening. And all of a sudden people are becoming more aware and seeing that, oh my gosh, like, even not only do these things taste better, but they see the all-around economic benefit, not just to themselves, but to their local community. And as in a cooperative structure, the idea is that we all benefit as we all grow together. It's not just one person makes more money and the other person makes less. It's the idea that with the local economy, everybody benefits as it grows.
We've been talking with Alan Walker and Tuan Schroeder of Pogue's Run Grocer in Indianapolis. For more information on the co-op's fifth year anniversary, which is January 16th from noon to 4 p.m., look for Pogue's Run Grocer on Facebook. Market vendors Mike Hoopen Gardner and his wife Christy Kickley moved back to Indiana. They wanted a farm. Now, that had never been practical before, but once they had some land, their dreams began to take shape.
That became Redbud Farm, where they started out with two goats and a llama. From that beginning, their efforts grew into the goat dairy and cheesemaking operation of Caprini Creamery. You can find Caprini goat cheese at the Broad Ripple Winter's Market, where Mike will tell you all about the farm and the cheeses they produce. But to learn more about the operation, I visited the Henry County Farm recently, where Christy explained how it all began.
I got my bachelor's degree in medical technology, and I've always been interested in science, and then went on to get my PhD in immunology, and I do research as my full-time job.
Hey, Lily, and do research on autoimmune diseases.
So how do you go from that to being a cheesemaker and a goat farmer?
Well, I was always interested in farming, but when I graduated from high school, it wasn't a practical thing to do for me at that time. Our family didn't farm, so I couldn't just go into the family business. So science was also very interesting to me, and so that's where I chose to go into the field of science and have pursued that. I went to a high school in Fort Wayne at Carroll High School and did my undergraduate at IPFW and then did my graduate work at the University of Southern California. Mike and I are both from Fort Wayne, and when we had our daughter, we were living in Pennsylvania at the time, and coming back to Fort Wayne to visit family twice a year, and it was an 11-hour drive, and we thought, well, this isn't such a great option, so I knew Lily was a great place to work, and so I just kind of kept my eye open, and they eventually had a opening in my field, and I applied and was hired, so we moved here in 2000, and I started working there. And we just had a hobby farm for a few years, and that kind of grew into the idea of having a commercial production farm.
So how does a small farm grow into a commercial business?
Yeah, we bought 5 acres, and I'd always loved goats, and we got 2 goats. And one year we were at the state fair, and we saw the llamas, and we thought, oh, they're just fascinating animals. And people said, well, they're really great as guard animals, so you could get them to guard your goats. So we got a couple llamas, and then we got a few more goats, and we got a few more llamas, and all of a sudden the farm is full, and we needed to find more acreage or stop buying animals.
So you opted for a bigger farm?
Yes, yeah, so we opted for a bigger farm. So we ended up thinking about what could we do that could be, you know, a commercial business that could actually support the family at some point. And we decided that milking the goats and actually making cheese out of the milk would give us the option of being, you know, a true family farm that would sustain us.
But as Christy explains, it takes a lot of research.
I do a lot of reading. I like that anyway, so I read a lot of books. But I've visited a lot of farms, I visit a lot of dairies. I actually took a week-long cheesemaking course at the University of Wisconsin up in Madison, because in the state of Wisconsin, you have to be a licensed cheesemaker to make cheese or even work in one of the cheese plants. And so they have a course that's a week-long that is like the introduction to cheesemaking. And so it's 3 days of classroom training and then 2 days in the cheesemaking lab there at the campus. It's pretty cool.
Learning how to actually make the cheese was a challenge early on.
In the kitchen, you know, with like a gallon at a time, and then kind of graduated to doing about 4 gallons at a time to try and do some larger batches to see if everything kind of translated to the larger batches. And we just give it away to people at work or people that we knew and, you know, got good feedback on that. And it was just a lot of practice. We were licensed to be a commercial dairy in August of 2011. So the farmers markets have already started by that year. So it was really 2012 that we got into the farmers markets. And now we can be found at the Carmel Farmers Market and the Broad Ripple Farmers Market.
As Christy and Mike have discovered, people are interested in hearing about the farm and how it all works.
Yeah, they do have a lot of questions, and they're happy that we're there because there hasn't been a goat cheese maker for several years in the Indianapolis area. that's had, you know, products at farmers markets you can get at the grocery. But so, yeah, people are intrigued by the fact that, you know, the goats live on the farm. We milk the goats and we turn that into cheese. And so they ask a lot of questions.
Walk me through the process of the cheese. So the goats, I mean, we were just in the barn. The goats are there in the barn, and then they get milked twice a day?
Yeah, so twice a day the milker pen comes up to a little holding area outside the dairy, and they wait their turn. They come in four at a time. We milk two at a time. They get some grain while they're being milked, and it takes about two and a half hours to milk. We're doing 50 now, and twice a day, and then, you know, the rest of the day they're out on pasture, provided that the weather's nice, and then in the evening they sleep in the barn, and then we repeat the cycle the next day and the next day.
So what types of Caprini goat cheeses are available?
So we always have a Chèvre available, so the soft goat cheese that most people are familiar with, and then we also make feta. And then we've got several Bloomy Rind cheeses, so the little cheeses that are like Brie or Camembert that have the white mold on the surface, and a few hard cheeses that we've been offering the last 2 years. And those, we're out of them right now, so we make what we can, and then when we run out, we run out. We'll be in full production probably by June or so. But yeah, we're still milking, but it's just a little bit slower.
Those who are interested in actually raising goats themselves can visit the farm to find out exactly what it takes to start a goat farm.
Yeah, we have folks visit a few times a year. There's people that want to start goat dairies and come out and visit, and we try to be as honest as possible about, you know, the amount of work that it takes every day, and no vacations, and the cost, the upfront cost for building the dairy. So we built everything from scratch. So we bought a cornfield and planned the dairy and the barns and the pastures and built the house. And, so, you know, we do try to give people the full information so they can make an informed decision on whether they really want to get into this or not, or they just want to have a couple pet goats and maybe milk one and have a little cheese for their family. We were committed to doing it. And so we just looked at it as that's what needs to be done to get to the end goal. I mean, I know that there have been some folks that have visited and have said, well, we're just not going to do that, or we're going to cut these corners. And, you know, you can take that risk, but if you get caught, there's, you know, consequences to that. And so we certainly don't encourage that. You know, we try to make sure that everybody that thinks they want to be a goat dairy can actually comply with all of the regulations and do things legally to, you know, make sure they're making a safe product for people. You know, understanding microbiology and sterile techniques and how to handle things without contaminating them is, I think, an important asset that I have that maybe some other folks wouldn't have if they don't have that science background. But, I mean, that's something that you can learn. You just have to be willing to do that.
But as Christy points out, the well-being of the goats is the primary concern.
I think the goats are extremely well taken care of, and you can't really have a successful dairy unless the goats are happy and healthy. So, you know, we have had people ask at the farmers markets, well, how do you treat your goats? And it's like, well, you know, we treat them well, because if we didn't, we wouldn't have, you know, good milk to make nice cheese with. So I think, you know, that's something. For me, the animals are the top priority, and their happiness and well-being is what we put first, and then the cheese-making comes second.
We've been talking with Christy Kickley of Caprini Creamery. You can find their goat cheeses at the Broad Ripple Winter Market. For more information, check out CapriniCreamery.com. Well, 15 years is a long time to stay with an employer these days, and it's especially unusual in the restaurant world. But Chef Aaron Butts, an award-winning chef at Joseph DeQuis Restaurant in Roanoke, Indiana, had been with the restaurant for 15 years since it opened. Now, though, he's working on opening his own restaurant in downtown Fort Wayne this spring to be called The Golden. I caught up with Aaron just after New Year's to look back at the past 15 years and talk about what's next.
The past 15 years has been just growing as a chef, you know, learning, constantly learning up until the last week there. Trying to bring something different, creative, some fresh ideas to the community, and really like honesty in the food, you know, like no shortcuts, everything's made from scratch, everything's real, you know, working with real farmers, and all that stuff became very important to me in the past, you know, 7-8 years, I guess.
Well, now you've been there since you were very young, you know, yeah. And so this has been your professional career.
Oh, yeah. I started when I was 23. I've been cooking since I was in high school, and that's really all I know. I started cooking. I just kind of took a job and as a dishwasher, and I was like, a buddy of mine actually talked me into the job. I was like, oh, come work here, man. They're paying blah, 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 dishwashing. I was like, oh, cool. And when I started, I didn't realize I was actually his replacement. So he left and went to work on the line, and I was stuck in the dish tank. I'm like, what are you doing? So I quickly got out of the dish tank and started doing salads for that hotel. And there was a fine dining restaurant attached to that hotel called Mallory's. And I was like watching the pastry chef. And one day he ended up quitting all of a sudden. And I was like the only buddy that knew what he was doing back there. I knew how to make the desserts and plate the desserts and whatnot. And, you know, I was 17. And
oh my goodness, and is this in Fort Wayne?
This is Fort Wayne, yeah. Don Hall's guest house, yeah. And, you know, the chefs at the time, there was only two chefs on the line, really small kitchen, small restaurant. And they're looking at me, and I'm like, I'm in high school. I mean, I'll do it. I'll fill in or whatever. And I ended up doing pastries for that restaurant, and which was like the finest restaurant in Fort Wayne. And, you know, years later, I ended up being the executive chef of that restaurant, and I got it, you know. It clicked with me. I was good at it. I loved it. I loved the atmosphere of the kitchen, being behind the line.
Was it something you'd planned to do? You know, there you are as a 17-year-old high school guy?
No. No, I had no plans. I mean, my plan was to be a cop, you know. I didn't have serious plans to be a cop, but my dad was a police officer, and I was going to follow kind of in his footsteps. And actually, still to this day, I still have like a kind of want to be a cop. Probably a little too old for that now, but I just like kind of fell into it. And I don't know if I would have been better at something else, you know. I don't know, but I definitely couldn't see myself in a cubicle or construction or anything like that, you know.
Well, you clearly have an aptitude for it. I mean, you've been at it a while. You have won awards. The restaurant has a fabulous reputation. So it seems like it's worked out.
It has. It's working out so far. Yeah, yeah. We'll see what this next step brings.
Well, speaking of the next step, so tell me, you know, what? Where you're at now. So New Year's Eve service was your last service at Joseph DeQuise. So what's coming next?
Well, the next step is we're going to open up our own restaurant in downtown Fort Wayne in the new Ash Building. It's called The Golden.
Now, why is it called that?
The Golden is myself and Sean Richardson, who is my sous chef at the restaurant and good friend. We started this pop-up craft cocktail thing, and we called it The Golden. You know, it was something to bring craft cocktails to Fort Wayne, which was severely lacking in that kind of service, and also something fun for us to do and learn, you know.
So now you've been doing that for the last year or so?
Yeah, just about a year and a half or so now, yeah. Well, a little over a year and a half. We actually took, like, 2015, we didn't do much. We were so busy in the restaurant, farm events, weddings. Sean was traveling. Sean was in France. He was staging at Blue Hill. So we didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of craft cocktail events, but we also ended up planning what is to be The Golden. So,
well, you were also studying, too, and taking classes, right?
Yes. Sean and I both took the Academy. Spirits class through Southern Wine and Spirits. both graduating high in the class and everything, and it's a great experience.
So now, how was it approaching craft cocktails as a chef?
For us, it seemed, some of it seemed easy, like the balance of flavors and tastes are kind of like innate to us. You know, we can taste something and be like, oh, it needs a little bit of acid, needs a little bit of sweet, needs a little more diluted a little bit. We understand that, you know, which I think gives us a little leg up on maybe not bartenders, like seasoned bartenders, but other people. You know, you can see somebody making a drink like, I don't know what this needs, you know. So we have that ability.
Did you like the different focus? You know, you said, you know, you'd been doing the pop-up cocktail thing. You know, you were learning about it and studying it. And did you like it?
Loved it. I mean, I was going to hang up my chef jacket and trade it in for, a jigger and a shaker. I really thought I was going to turn into a bartender, you know.
No, that's kind of interesting, you know, because, you know, for a chef who's won so many awards, to think about switching that. What was the appeal?
Something new. Obviously not that I've learned everything there is to know about cooking, because scratching the surface, but something new and something fun. It's another aspect of service, you know, and the food industry. I just loved it. I love the people. The people I met down here in Indianapolis through the academy, and I've made some lifelong friends, I feel, you know. And I don't know, it's a really cool, it's a cool atmosphere. It's a cool lifestyle.
Well, you've done some competitions. I remember a chef versus bartender competitions. So you dove into it.
Yes. Josh Gonzalez barely beat us, I think. We've done some cooking competitions as the Golden, I guess Greg Hardesty, and we've done some cocktail competitions and whatnot. We're not really into competition stuff. It's fun.
But it seems like you've been enjoying it, really enjoying that part of it.
Oh, I enjoy everything. I'm pretty, pretty easy guy.
We've been talking with Chef Aaron Butts, formerly of Joseph DeQuis' restaurant in Roanoke. He'll be opening a new restaurant, The Golden, in Fort Wayne this year. Stay with us for more about Aaron and The Golden here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well-known Indiana chef Aaron Butts, formerly of Joseph DeQuis' restaurant in Roanoke, has left that restaurant, along with his wife, general manager and sommelier Carmen McGee, and his sous chef, Sean Ash, to open a new restaurant in Fort Wayne. This spring, the team will open The Golden in a new downtown Fort Wayne development. It's a big move, and I wanted to know what a chef thinks about as he leaves one restaurant and starts to build another.
What was the last service like?
Last service was New Year's Eve, obviously a very busy night. It was a blast. I had some friends in there sitting right at the kitchen table, right in front of the kitchen. Got to sit down with them towards the end of service and have a drink. And a lot of people were coming in just to, you know, have that last service, you know. And I don't know, the past few weeks have been great. People come up from Indianapolis to dine there. Like, hey, this is like our last chance. And it's just been great to see like the outpouring of support and, people driving, 2 hours to get there or whatever, just to have dinner.
To have dinner with your food.
Yeah, I guess. I don't have a really big ego, so it's like not, I don't know. I've had a lot of support and a lot of love coming out.
So now, what is it like turning to something completely different, leaving that behind and moving on to something that you're creating out of your own vision?
Well, it's exciting. It's scary. It's stressful. It's everything. It's like every emotion. I don't know. It's there's a certain amount of freedom that Carmen and I both felt when we left DeQuis. Like, oh my God, we can do whatever we want. You know, we make all the decisions. You know, now it's actually we're going to do something that's ours, and not someone else's. You know, a lot of people are saying, finally opening your own restaurant, or you've been there forever, and you know what? I feel that the time is right. The time is right now, and I could have opened a restaurant years ago, probably. You know, we've had opportunities to do things, and nothing sounded as sweet as this. And you know, this is the perfect time for us. So there's all that. You know, it's like I've got the cooking part down. You know, I know we can make a menu that's going to please the community and bring some excitement to the culinary, you know, landscape in Fort Wayne and Indiana. And the bar thing is still a little new, but I'm confident in our abilities with that. It's like the business ownership. That's the part that we're like a little freaking out about, you know. But we've got some people behind us that have a lot of experience and some good business sense, so we'll be all right.
So now tell me what the Golden will be like. Is there a comparison? How would you describe it to people?
And that's the hardest question. The hardest question we've been asked. People ask us, like, what's the food going to be like? I don't know. It's just going to be great. How would you describe Milktooth's food? You know, how do you describe that?
Honestly, that is a question. I just told Jonathan Brooks that the other day, that when people ask me what kind of food he serves, I have a hard time telling them.
Yeah. And I have a hard time describing, like, what we're going to do. Obviously, it's going to be locally sourced, right? Farm to fork, all those buzzwords. But we'll try to not to rely on those words, those buzzwords. You know, it should be assumed that we're buying from local farmers. I mean, we'll put that out there, obviously, but people will know that the food that they're getting is good food. It's locally sourced. It's, you know, sustainable. It's so they can feel comfortable that whatever they order is not coming from a semi truck parked out back in a cardboard box out of the freezer, like 99% of the food we get.
So we can trust that the food will be top quality, the best you can make. What will the rest of the restaurant be like? You know, we've talked about fine dining and service and atmosphere and that sort of thing. So describe that a little bit.
Well, the restaurant, we're going to try to take the fine dining, like the white tablecloths off the tables, okay? Still have that service, still have that attention to detail, technique in the kitchen, all that. The service is going to be top-notch, well-trained servers. The vibe in there is just going to be approachable. It's going to be fun. You know, when you go to Milktooth, you're like, I keep bringing Milktooth because I was just there today. But the vibe in there is like, it's cool. You know, it's casual. It's approachable. And you look at the menu and it's exciting. And when you get the food, you're like, oh my God, everything I'm eating here is delicious. And that's what we're looking to do. You know, we're not trying to, you know, Fort Wayne's got a stigma of all the restaurants are like doing the same old stuff all the time. All these chefs and servers have worked at all these different restaurants. It's just like there's a constant rotation of people all doing almond-crusted walleye and, you know, crab cakes or whatever. And they all just, like, pop from restaurant to restaurant. And I've worked in that restaurant, you know. I've done it. But it's time to wake it up a little bit, you know. Shake it up and bring some fresh taste. And I think downtown Fort Wayne is going to be a great spot for us. We're kind of coming home, you know, after 15 years of doing it out in Roanoke. I think we're going to be a welcome addition to, you know, the culinary scene.
Do you have big ambitions for the restaurant? You have gotten a lot of kudos over the years. You've had a James Beard semifinalist nod. You've cooked at the Beard House. What are your aspirations in that area?
You know, Sean and I have talked a lot about this, and we don't really have that many aspirations as far as awards and nominations or what have you. Our focus is really just going to be on the food and putting our heads down, just doing what we know best and letting the food and service and the restaurant speak for itself. You know, we're not looking for any front cover magazine shoots or awards or any of that kind of stuff. We just want to do the best we can do.
Do you think Fort Wayne is ready for a change?
We'll see. I think they are, though. I think there's, from the support that we've seen so far, just with the announcement of what we're doing with the Golden and leaving Dequies, it sure does seem like people are ready for something, because everybody I talked to was like so excited about it. And honestly, we can't go anywhere. Carmen and I can't go to a coffee shop or anywhere without running into three or four people that are like, oh my God, we're so excited. This is amazing. Fort Wayne needs this. We'll be your first people there. And do you need taste testers?
Is that gratifying, that response?
It's unexpected and, yes, gratifying for sure. Yeah, yeah. I had no idea.
We've been talking with Chef Aaron Butts, formerly of Joseph Dequies Restaurant in Roanoke, who will be opening a new restaurant, The Golden, in downtown Fort Wayne this year. To follow along with the progress, look for The Golden on Facebook. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in to the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Greg Monzel, Alan Walker, Antoine Schroeder of Pogue's Run Grocer, Christy Kickley of Caprini Creamery, and Chef Aaron Butts of The Golden in Fort Wayne. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.